smart than it deserves to be in a dangerous world. Radical, extreme, less free, fair, strong, and smart. Those are very tough words. Is that really what you said?
It certainly is what I said, and it is what I mean. I think we are dealing with an administration that has thrown over the consensus building and the bipartisan agreement that basically built the 20th century America that I'm very proud of, that I'm a product of. And yes, you know, there may have been people more to the right or more to the left, but if you look at the efforts that were made starting in the 1930s to save capitalism from itself, to put us on the right track, to have the kind of middle class that would grow and provide ladders of opportunity for anybody willing to work hard. You look at how we built up alliances, the painstaking, frustrating work of working with other nations around the world. I don't think that this president had a mandate to do that coming out of the 2011.
But if you look at the president's main policies, Iraq, the tax cut, Medicare, in each case, he had significant support from Democrats. 29 Democrats on the Iraq resolution, a dozen on his tax cut, 11 just now on the Medicare prescription drugs. If these policies are so radical and extreme, why are so many Democrats going along?
Well, I voted for the Iraq resolution, as you might remember. And I'm a strong believer in giving the executive authority. I wish that when my husband was president, people in the Congress had been more willing to recognize presidential authority. You recall we didn't get authority to go into either Bosnia or Kosovo, and I think that was a mistake. But I regret the way the president has used the authority. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, we're heading down a road that is rooted in the values and ideals and practicalities of what got us to this point, looking back at previous administrations. And there was an expectation about how that authority would be used, which, you know, frankly, I'm, you know, disappointed that it wasn't.
When you say that America is less free, are you referring to the Patriot Act?
I'm referring to a combination of factors. I think there are serious questions about the Patriot Act. Again, well, I voted for it.
Let me stop you right
yes,
there.
Sir.
Because Dianne Feinstein recently said, Senator Feinstein, in a hearing, my office has received 21,434 complaints, and almost all of them were about Patriot 2, which hasn't even been submitted and isn't the law, and most of the other complaints just didn't bear out. I mean, this is a part of the staple of campaign rhetoric during the presidential election, but...
Shut the hell up, George Will. This nonsense about who's less free because of the Patriot Act. How about Mohammed Butt? How about Padilla? How about the 5,000 detainees of South Asian and Arab descent, fool? I guess that type of freedom neglect doesn't count, huh? And then you got Miss Crime Bill Clinton, Hillary. What are you yapping about, talking about, and admitting that I voted for the Iraq resolution? I'm a strong believer in giving the executive authority. Well, I'm glad you admitted, Ms. Crime Bill. In other words, you believe in state capital terrorism. That's just what your executive authority knuckleheads like your husband, Crime Bill, and Boy George have done with it. And then you babble out. I regret the way Boy George has used his authority. Listen, Boy George has used his authority like the Silk Road strategist for the U.S. world corporate empire and dollarism have outlined for him and other minions to follow. Here's the antidote, slave time. Check this out. Listening to 104.1, 96.3 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world's slave revolt. Tonight, we're going to blast right into a Beyond the Shadow segment as it deals with how the Democrats at least the three, Mosley, Braun, Sharpton, and Kucinich, are somehow victims of the corporate media world. I've heard it all now. And then we'll blast into other issues concerning the illusion of the world. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt Radio.
Did you expect me to vote for the lesser of two evils? Never. It's more like the evil of two lessers. That's like saying, M, choose your oppressor. Pick one, Jeffrey Dahmer or Hannibal Lecter. You want crack, coke, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper. They all effed up, and neither one of them better. Because crack is like a Democrat, cocaine Republican, marijuana independent party, same government. You really think your vote counts? Ask my folk down in Florida, didn't they straight throw they vote out? And them crackers act innocent, knowing they depend on this, benefiting from hush money from big businesses. Money is the president, dead prayers, dollar bill, and I bet no convention ain't spending this. Soon they gonna need us, believe us. When did these cats pick rappers to be political leaders? Don't be pawns, be Lolita LeBrons. Run up on them arm like mother, it's on. If Congress don't make progress, let's change the process. No more times running for office. Talking like that, these people will call you crazy. What's crazy is ain't no difference between me and Jay-Z. The same boat brought us the same place from slavery, so we rock the same chains anyway, baby, baby.
Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Shadow. You know, recently Ted Koppel asked a couple of the Democrats who are vying for candidacy of the president, Carol Mosley Braun, Dennis Kucinich, and Al Sharpton, when basically they were going to hang it up. And he more or less phrased it as a thing that you don't have the points, the constituents, and you don't have the money. And now that old Gore has tipped his hat towards one of you candidates, what is this really all about? It seems that a large segment of the progressive community, you expect the conservative, has kind of latched on to this poor Mosley, Braun, Kucinich, Sharpton type of analysis, as if they are somehow a part of the victims of this recent situation that has transpired. We're going to explore that and take it beyond the shadows. But first off, let's hear directly what a old Koppel had to say to a Braun, Kucinich, and Sharpton, and we'll take it step by step from there. Check it out.
This is a question to Ambassador Braun, Reverend Sharpton, Congressman Kucinich. You don't have any money, or at least not much. Reverend Sharpton has almost none. You don't have very much, Ambassador Braun.
You raised $4.5 million. I mean, that's not nothing.
You got about $750,000 in the bank right now, and that's close to nothing when you're coming up against this kind of opposition. But let me finish the question. The question is, will there come a point when polls money, and then ultimately the actual votes that will take place here in places like New Hampshire, the caucuses, and Iowa. Will there come a point when we can expect one or more of the three of you to drop out, or are you in this as sort of a vanity candidacy? Reverend Sharpton, you go first.
Well, first of all, I think the fact that I'm doing so well in many states in the polls and ahead in national polls of people with far more money shows that I know how to deal with the national deficit probably better than anybody on this stage. So I think that in all seriousness, Ted, the problem is that we are reducing politics to people with money. I think that Americans want people with ideas. The suggestion is that if you can't buy your way now, that you can't seek the highest office in the land. That is to really sell the White House. I think that people with no money that can generate the kind of support I'm generating, that can galvanize a lot of young people, a lot of people that left this party and voted for Ralph Nader. This is what wins elections. I refuse to allow us to continue to act like the person with the best dollar or the biggest dollar has the best message. If money's going to win this, Bush is going to win. Nobody up here is going to raise the money Bush raises. What we must do is raise the votes he can't get, and you can't buy those votes.
We're talking about two things. We're talking about money, and we're talking about ultimately standing in the polls. There are only a couple of ways that you can measure how someone is doing at this stage in the election process: money and polls. You're not doing terribly well with money. You're doing even worse in the polls.
Well,
when do you pull out?
When I take the oath of office, when you're there to cover it. And I can tell you, Ted, you know, we started at the beginning of this evening talking about an endorsement. Well, I want the American people to see where the media takes politics in this country. We start talking about endorsements. Now we're talking about polls, and then we're talking about money. Well, you know, when you do that, you don't have to talk about what's important to the American people. Ted, I'm the only one up here on a stage that actually voted against the Patriot Act and voted against the war. The only one on the stage. I'm also one of the few candidates up here who's talking about taking our health care system from this for-profit system to a not-for-profit, single-payer, universal health care for all. I'm also the only one who has talked about getting out of NAFTA and the WTO and going back to bilateral trade conditioned on workers' rights, human rights, and the environment. Now, I may be inconvenient for some of those in the media, but, you know, I'm sorry about that.
Now, what's interesting about some of the things that were said was that, some of the things that Sharpton and Kucinich had to say weren't all that bad, but it has to be taken within a certain context. And essentially what I'm saying is that they are working for the Democratic Party that has done, in collaboration with the Republican Party, in the corporate market system, all of these things that they are now complaining about. When Sharpton says that the problem is that we are reducing politics to money, as if politics has not already intentionally been reduced in this market system to money. The reason why you have a genetically modified food run amok without any real systematic labeling system has to do with politics and the power of lobbying within the bourgeois political system. The reason why we have these three holes in the ozone and the U.S. Empire doing everything it can to bail out of any type of real obligation to be part of a global community to deal with ozone depletion and global pollution through crude oil has a lot to do with economics being reduced to market systems. I mean, there's been all types of documents of, you know, like Congress on $1 million a day, where it basically means that if you're going to run for Congress, or if you wish to maintain a seat after you receive one, you have to raise $1 million a day. Now, this money does not just float out of the Mississippi. It floats out of the corporations that are polluting the Mississippi River, which is why it has a 7,500-foot dead zone in it. Because of all of these toxic runoffs and because of the petroleum industry, which our agricultural system is based on, that run off into this major artery. Now, the reason why this is not a discussion for the masses is because those who are part of the corporate media system are tied to and a part of those who are part of the polluting industries and other things, food industry, et cetera, et cetera. And their priority is capital markets, i.e. money, investments, trade, riches. So politics gets reduced once again to money. And the Democrats have been working hand in hand to reduce it and remove as many people as possible, the masses as possible, from having grassroots connections to the day-to-day issues that affect us. So, Ted Koppel says there will come a point when the polls say it and the money says it. When will you drop out? Well, obvious that within the electoral process, it's going to become clear after, you know, certain states are voted on and all of that type of stuff, who's going to be their little Democratic candidate. So why is there a push? And part of the reason is that you have a situation where there's a push to quell as much discussion and debate as possible. This is part of the Gumpification process. It's not that there's a great vigorous debate on a true intellectual and global scale of such magnitude of a U.S. empire being involved in so many and having so many effects on the day-to-day lives of people in this country and throughout the world. But even just a little chat they do back and forth it goes beyond the parameters that those in the corporate media world are used to like to see and hear being discussed. So they want to quell it down as quick as possible and then just basically have two easy candidates, Democrats and Republicans, go full steam ahead. And once again, that's going to be engineered as how much money can be, bought up by the candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a simplification, a gumpification of what should be just vigorous debates happening. This should be encouraged in a healthy society, but it's just the opposite. Now, Koppel said there's only two ways to measure money, or measure how you're doing. Money and polls. Now, once again, this is how, in part, this whole mindset intentionally leads into the grips of the lobbyist industry. Now, a little while ago, I did a thing on a segment on what is happening to the environment, how the ocean is collapsing, the fish populations are collapsing, and the fish that are still around, like tuna, swordfish, have such high levels of mercury, it's almost unbelievable. How polar ice caps are melting, and how the ramifications of this are tenfold, and how you intentionally have a situation where all lobbying industries have overwhelming effect intentionally within this market system, undue effect on our basic lives. So it's not just one particular type of lobbying industry, AIPAC or, you know, the car. It's the whole mechanism that is designed around a market system to intentionally disenfranchise the masses and empower the corporate market system. Well, this is what the Democrats and Republicans have helped build up. So all of a sudden, them acting like, you know, we should not reduce things down to money, when this is what intentionally they have done, is a little bit beyond hypocritical. But let's explore this a little bit further, because next, here's Dennis Kucinich responding more to Ted Koppel's question later. When he was asked about how ABC then pulled out its reporters who were covering him, Sharpton, and Carol Moseley Brown's campaign. So let's see what Kucinich has to say about this, and then let's take it from there. Check this out.
I've always had a great deal of respect for ABC News, but I think that the coincidence of the challenge that I made to Mr. Koppel and the action by ABC News in taking someone out of the campaign is noteworthy, and it certainly requires further explanation to the public. You know, I think the attempt by the media to determine who people should vote for and who they shouldn't vote for, to determine who the candidates are and who are not acceptable as candidates, is something that raises real questions about the nature of the media's role in our society and about what rights they have to be able to engage in a process of pre-selection. And when you understand the corporate nature of the media, it further troubles one who's concerned about the nature of democracy itself. So I'll tell you, Amy, I apparently struck a nerve when I spoke about the and expressed concerns about the role of the media in trying to direct the political process and the election in a certain way, because I've been hearing for the last 2 days from people all over the United States, and the response in New Hampshire has been notable, because the 2 days that I've spent campaigning since then, I would just walk into a room, you know, before I may not even be noticed, and suddenly people are applauding, and I think that is because they recognize that I was willing to stand up and speak out and talk and ask, you know, openly ask, look, why don't we talk about things that really concern the people of this country, not about polls and endorsements and who's raised how much money.
Okay, once again, you know, some of the things that Kucinich is saying is not all that bad, but once again, it's a context. This is dancing in the shadows in many ways, because, you know, when he says that we must question the role that the media plays and who not to vote for, and understand the nature of the corporate media, what's fascinating about this and how these Democrats are crying about what Koppel had said is that during the 2000 election, Nader was running, and Nader was getting attacked by the Democrats and ridiculed in many ways by the corporate media. But Nader still was able to get a projection of at least 5% of the vote, which under the rules of running for president during the election time, this would allow you to participate in the debates. So the Democrats and the Republicans got together and they raised the bar from 5% of the projection to 15% without a whimper from the corporate media. which, of course, they knew they would not be called on by the corporate media because they're in cahoots. So here you have the Democrats and Republicans intentionally superseding the agreed upon rules and standards for a percentage that you must require before you would be allowed to be heard on a larger scale and participate in the debates with the two twin parties. And here they concoct a little scheme to intentionally derail the process that would have allowed Nader to get in the mix with both the Democrats and Republicans, because both of them did not want the masses of people to hear Nader open up the parameters and voice on subject matters that they quite often do not want to expand upon and be called upon. It's not that Nader's some super radical. It's just that within these particular times and confines, the range of discussion is so narrow that just Nader being able to get into the mix was beyond what they were willing to abide by. So when they talk about the democratic process being undermined by money and this and that, and here their party intentionally undermined a third party candidate's ability to have his voice heard, and they relied on the corporate media to not make this, and knew that the corporate media, because the corporate media is in cahoots with those parties, they knew that the corporate media would not make this discussion. Where were they then? Where were they then? Where was Kucinich and all of them then decrying how their party had intentionally undermined the democratic process of a third party candidate? See, this is what I mean by these clowns hiding in the shadow. See, it's one thing to point out some of these contradictions when it happens to you, but when it's your party that actively participates in undermining these issues, then there's no other word but hypocrite. And see, that's part of the problem. See, Kucinich and Sharpton, Braun, and many of these Democrat types, they know what buttons to push within the progressive community. And they know that there are so many contradictions within the corporate media system and market system in general, that they can push these particular buttons from time to time when it gets highlighted on them. But when they actively participate in thrusting other people's democratic rights within the shadows, well, they're in there pushing the button with their allies. You can't have it both ways. You can't participate with the Republicans and the corporate media system in undermining someone's basic democratic right. I mean, because the corporate media did not stand up and say, no, Nader should be allowed to participate in the debates. The standards had always been 5%. There's no way that we are not going to raise our voice to you Democrats and Republicans hiding in the shadows and raising the bar to 15%. This is blatant what you guys are trying. No, the corporate media didn't do that, because they don't. The corporate media is part of the Democrat and Republican system. So they're all in cahoots. So there would be no reason for them to do this type of stuff. So this is what I mean when I say that there's a level of hypocrisy that needs to be exposed, and not to just let these guys play victim to Ted Koppel and the ABC, when all of a sudden ABC is says, well, look, if you guys don't accept the fact that you are no longer deemed viable and worthy of still running, so we're just going to pull our reporters. This type of disregard for voices of opinion is something that's deeply rooted within the corporate media system. It's deeply rooted within the Clear Channel networks of the world. That's what they do. And it was a Democratic president, crime Bill Clinton, in 1996 that passed the Telecommunications Act, which gave more power to the Clear Channels and corporate media systems of the world, or and in particular this country, that allows them to negate and neglect a variety of voices and a range of voices. So the fact that it has gotten to the point where even those within the bourgeois party of the Democrats are often herded off into the sunset like cattle should not come as any surprise. They've helped in this process of corporate media manipulation and Gumpification. Now, next up, Kucinich responds to whether he felt Ted Koppel and company were paying him back for his response about, you know, the corporations and them trying to actively decide who and who is not a viable candidate and at what point. So let's see what Kucinich further has to say, and let's take it from there. Check this out.
Well, I hope not, because I admire Ted Koppel. I believe he's one of the great American journalists. But I also think that the media has a blind spot about the role that they have in a democratic society. It's not their position to create the news. It's not their position to try to determine who the candidate should be before an election. It's really their job to report the news. And I think that Nightline always has done well in reporting things and interpreting them with people who are representing diverse viewpoints. Matter of fact, their success has been in assuring diversity of viewpoints. And yet it's very interesting that that Nightline or the representative, Mr. Koppel, would seek to squelch the individual and individuals, because not just myself, it's about Reverend Sharpton, about Ambassador Moses Brown, and try to stop the truly alternative viewpoints from coming into the debate. And in a way, it's not even about us. It's a much larger question. The real question here is who rules? Is it an unelected media handing to the people, the candidates of their of the media's choice, or do the people actually have the opportunity to make their choices at the ballot box without the kind of overt and even heavy-handed approach that the media might use? And you know, this strikes at the heart of not only a democracy, but when you think of the many serious matters that are confronting this country, there's so much more the media could do to elevate public discourse and to create conditions where we feel there's a free exchange of ideas. They, you know, and so this perhaps can start a whole new discussion in the political debate. And if it does that, then it served a very positive purpose.
Okay, now you can see that Kucinich in many ways, beyond saying, or you know, the proper quote-unquote soundbite type of cliché-ish progressive slash liberal statements, is also in dreamland and also trying to legitimatize something that you can't legitimatize. When he says that, I believe that Ted Koppel is one of the great American journalists. And every time you turn around, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and other organizations are doing a report that Ted Koppel's Nightline show, just like many of these other ones, have the typical, you know, 80-something percent white, male, 80-something percent white, overwhelmingly centrist or conservative think tank organizations on again and again. And then when they're given a list of viable people who are in true opposition to some of these issues that they discussed, they come out with these same cliché-ish comments about either one, not knowing these people, even though they're giving it to them over and over again, or that these people do not respond in the proper soundbite way. Now, once again, this gets into the whole Gumpification process, because so much of the society and the media system is predicated on these one-line Gumpification statements. And this is intentional, because you can say, talk about, like, where everyone knows that Saddam Hussein is a madman and a killer. Okay, now, if all of a sudden you said that, Saddam is not the only madman and killer, Sam is the one who sits on the throne, well, if the masses hear that type of quote-unquote soundbite response, for the most part, it could be easily spun into you being more or less a lunatic. Now, you need more time to go into how Sam has helped create the Saddams of the world and the Osamas of the world and his School of the America training camp of international terror is beyond repute. But you need more time to go into these details and the fact of the School of the Americas graduates, the devastation they have done to Latin America and other places throughout the world. As many of you listeners know, I have a whole commentary about 20 minutes long just on the School of the Americas. But if everything is based off of and gumpified down to just a little soundbite process, then you don't have time to explore and explain out these types of issues. And Nightline's show under Ted Koppel is not predicated off of these types of detailed commentary and analysis. So to throw Koppel as one of the great American journalists, I mean, this just shows that Kucinich is part of legitimatizing part of the problem. And that's in essence because he's part of the problem. The whole aspect of him also saying that Nightline has always done well in showing diverse viewpoints. I mean, who is he trying to kid? Look, you have a large number of people who in this country, as we know, are not served well about their understanding of U.S. global politics, the war it is in now, and various other issues that it should, that the masses of these people should be more in tune to. And while Nightline is not the only problem, Nightline is one of the problems. When you look internationally, in France, Britain, other countries throughout the world, you'll see that the level of discussion and the in-depthness of the discussion is much more in-depth than any of the stuff that Nightline, puckers out there. So you just can't justify Nightline and Koppel and all of that type of stuff unless you yourself are part of the problem. Now, next, let's go into Ralph Nader. Nader was responding to an audience member who asked Ralph not to run in 2004. This person said that he was a supporter of Ralph, but he doesn't want him to run. Now, whether he truly was a supporter or not, who knows? But we do know that there are many people who are not supporters of Nader, who are liberal types, you know, and all of that, and who definitely don't want Nader to run and have been upset with the fact that he ran in the 2000 election. So let's see what Nader has to say about someone asking him not to run, and then let's explore it a little bit from there. Check this out.
We say this gentleman is a civil liberties champion, correct? Have you ever told anyone not to speak? Okay. Political speech involves running for office. It is one of the most preferred uses of the First Amendment. You can challenge, rebut, argue. Please never tell any candidate not to speak.
Now, that shows you some of the problem right there. Because there's a certain amount of contempt that some of these people who call themselves progressives actually have for, oppositional or, I mean, it's not that Nader's radical or anything. He's not really all that oppositional. He's still within the framework of capitalism and stuff. So just him expanding the level a little bit. And see, that gets to another aspect of the problem. Because when you hear various Democratic supporters who call themselves liberal and progressive extremely upset with Nader, that really shows and don't want him to run and this and that. That really shows the contempt from those people that they actually have for the masses of people. They're contemptuous of people having options to vote for someone outside of who they think that they should vote for. In other words, as if people who call themselves progressive are obligated to vote for the Democrats and during the 2000 election, Al Gore. And the fact that they went beyond that during the 2000 election has brought up more than the ire of many of these people. Now that right there shows you a level of unhealthiness that exists not within just the corporate media system that we've been talking about, and not with just within the Democrat and Republican parties, but many people who call themselves progressive and liberals who support these parties. When you come to a point where you are so contemptuous of the masses who may be quote-unquote swayed to vote for another candidate, or angry that they actually have an option to vote for someone other than who you wish and feel, and on a certain level demand that they don't vote for, then that shows an unhealthy, and see, this is in part how the Democrats and Republicans were able to engineer this little situation during the 2000 election when, as I mentioned before, they raised the bar from 5 to 15%. On who could not be in the who could and who could not be in the debates when Nader was projected to have more than 5%. This is how you have many people who say they're liberals and progressives. Well, actually, they are liberals and progressives just within the bourgeois system and frame of mind. This is how you didn't see much of an you didn't see any ire or any contradiction being expressed by them about this process. You can't wave the banner of being someone who's a proponent of free speech and justice, and then at the same time see the party that you represent structurally engineer someone out of a democratic quote-unquote process. You can't have it both ways. See, this is how these types of things end up corroding all over. See, it happened to Nader in 2000. And now many people are upset that it's happening to some of the voices that they like, Kucinich, Braun, and Sharpton. Now they're kind of upset about how it's happening to them when they supported and they still support the Democratic Party that's been involved in structurally engineering this corrosiveness in the first place. So this is part of why I'm doing, and I decided to do this Beyond the Shadow segment in the first place. When you have that type of mentality, and this type of mentality, I should point out, is not just nationally, it's, as we know, internationally. Both the Democrats and Republicans and the corporate media have decided on an international level what leaders are responsible, appropriate, viable, and what are not. Even when these particular leaders have won electoral elections. Haiti. Here you have Aristide, who when he first ran, he went up actually against a U.S.-backed candidate. So it wasn't like the U.S. didn't have their candidate that they wanted in and helped, you know, fund money, you know, through its corporations and all of that. Because they have Mickey Mouse down there and Levi Strauss, Nestle's chocolate, etc. You have Aristide, who ran and had a program that was going to implement in minimum wage, Social Security, child labor laws, etc. Aristide got 67% of the vote. So he overwhelmingly won. The U.S.-backed candidate only got 13% of the vote. The other candidates got the rest. Did the U.S. stop there? Did they say, okay, well, look, this was a free and fair election? No. The U.S. then started to fund another form of an oppositional group that was put together by the CIA. It was a terrorist group, FRAP. And this terrorist group then got to working. And after killing thousands of people, they undemocratically and viciously ran Aristide out the country. And they put things in proper order for Nestle's chocolate, Levi Strauss, and Mickey Mouse. Now, part of the reason why this was not discussed in the corporate media system is in part because they're one and the same. Mickey Mouse, i.e. Disney, is owned by ABC. So it doesn't behoove them to discuss why they are involved in these forms of state-sponsored tyranny and terror. Now, the reason why you didn't hear an uproar between the Democrats and Republicans is because they're responsive to the corporate market interests. And since Nestle's chocolate and Mickey did not like the fact that Aristide was trying to implement in something that would cut into their profit margin, well, you gotta go. It doesn't matter how you got into office, democratically or not, you've gotta go. So here you have deeply embedded in the American fabric a process engineered by the Democrats and Republicans and the corporate media system to undermine the democratic process. Now, we've recently seen the same thing attempt to be engineered in Venezuela with Chavez. See, these are the types of, and we saw how the corporate media, from the raggedy New York Times all the way down, play into the soundbite comments from elected officials, from corporate sponsors, from those in the Pentagon, that basically Chavez needed to get out when they initially performed the coup. They had to backslide, of course, when he was able to retain his position. But it was not from anything that the Democrats or Republicans or the corporate media system in the U.S. were doing, because they were on the opposite side of the fence. And they were on the opposite side of the fence of justice and democracy in any true sense of the word, because of and how they engineered and tried to engineer that process. So when you hear these Democrats berail what is happening and what has happened to them, in this little, you know, presidential electoral process, when they are part of a party and mechanism that is intentionally undermining the human rights and destroying the lives, literally, in Haiti, destroying the lives of people through its corporate media network, its School of the American Terrorism Network, its CIA, and its corporate-backed and lobbied to death parties, Democrats and Republicans. It puts other things into a particular context. Hold on one second. All right, next, let's hear George Stephanopoulos. He's and George Will. They're on this ABC show. They took the place of Cokie Roberts and some other clown. Some Sunday show that comes on Sunday mornings. Now they're asking Hillary Clinton, George Stephanopoulos is, if the situation called for it, would she get on the bill as a vice president candidate if needed be? You know, in other words, the call for the Democrats came loud and clear that it was necessary. Let's see what they have to say. Check this out.
We have a minute left, and I can't let you go without one final political question. I know you said you're not going to run, no way, no how, but one question. The nominee comes to you in July, has all this polling, he's run it by your pollster and says, Senator Clinton, if you join the ticket, Democrats can win this race. If you don't, they can't. Will you accept?
That is not going to happen, George. That is so
that is not a no.
It could happen. The realm of the possible, that is not going to happen. Look, I'm going to support the nominee, and I think we've got at least a 50-50, if not slightly better, chance of winning. And I know that's not something that people around Washington necessarily agree with. And so I'm going to support the nominee. I hope we're going to have a victory, and then I'll support the nominee, whoever it is, assuming that person does a good job for re-election in 08.
And if you're on the ticket, please come back and talk to us about it. Senator Clinton, thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Now, what's interesting about this is that, even within the bourgeois spectrum of things, this is how you know that the society is really on a gumpification process. Hillary Clinton has basically held one office, and you know she hasn't even completed that. She's a senator. She's been the husband of the legendary crime Bill Clinton for years and years and all of that, while he ran his way through a political office. But this is just her first political term in a particular office. But in other words, even historically in this country, she would not have been regarded as someone who has had enough experience. But in today's climate in America, that's not necessary anymore, because so much is based off of popularity, certain forms of exposure, media forms of celebrity. So from Hillary to Arnold Schwarzenegger, you see this process. Here, old Raggedy Arnold has never held office, and he was just a mediocre actor. Yet, because of his celebrity status, he was able to be propelled into governorship in California without any experience in politics at all. This shows you the gumpification process, when all you need is the certain types of sound bites and a certain look and image. And this is what is necessary. So when you hear these Democrats like Kucinich and them complaining about how the media has downplayed and is downplaying their role and not giving them the respectability that they should have when they are part of a party that has helped parlay this Gumpification process. This is not a coincidence that this has happened. This is not a coincidence that we're at a stage where a Schwarzenegger can win governorship in a major state, California, in this country, and Hillary Clinton can be considered a very viable vice president candidacy, and many people think that she would have been the candidate of choice if she had decided to run for a presidency under the Democratic ticket. Now, without any experience at all, I mean, this shows how far down the process has come. And it has come down this far because of the role that the Democrats have played. So, in many ways, there's really no justification for Braun, Kucinich, and Sharpton to be crying about the process that their parties have helped create. Their parties have helped create this kind of expediency. Are you in for the moment? How's your how high of a quote-unquote profile do you have? And a lot of that has nothing to do with any kind of true grit experience and political savoir-faire, so to speak. It has to do with a kind of a celebratorial status and pizzazz. So, you know, this has to be put once again in proper context. But next, let's hear from Carol Moseley Braun responding to why she thinks that the pulling of the reporter who was covering her and the other two candidates that ABC has pulled from reporting, that being Sharpton and Kucinich, why she thinks that was ideological, not just because they didn't have enough money. Check this out.
That's why I think it's about money, because quite frankly, and I'll just use the name, John Edwards is not polling as well as I am, or Al Sharpton, or Dennis Kucinich, depending on which polls you look at and what part of the country. I mean, he's below all of us, and yet and still his name, you know, is never mentioned. And I just think that ABC made a decision against, again, giving voice to women, giving voice to minorities, and giving voice to someone who represents the left in this race. I really think it's ideological and not personal, and has to do with money.
Okay, now once again, you know, I think that she's in part right. I think, though, that they are tied into each other, though. Because, once again, the way the lobbying system works and who can and cannot, who's in favor, has a lot to do with what you say and represent. And if and the more you tie yourself within the corporate media or the corporate lobbying system and the marketing mechanisms, well, quite naturally, those who have the most money to give in a process where you have to have a large cash reserve to even run for office, well, quite naturally, that's going to be those who are perceived to be more in cahoots with the marketeers, the corporate marketeers of the world. Now, this process has been fermented by the Democrats and Republicans. They have played a role in creating this $1, one vote, so to speak, society. The fact that they feel a little left out in the cold because some of the issues that they speak to go outside of the parameters of those in ruling class power. Well, once again, this is a process. Now, there is a continuous shift to where the society and those who run for office are engage more and more deeply in the corporate speak. Because there's been such a shift in the domination of the working class and the overall standard of living for the working class and a voice for the working class. You've had a situation where crime Bill Clinton is still projected as someone who was left the center, is someone who was a spokesperson for the masses. Now, this can only happen with the derailment of a lot of the social justice movements within our society. So it's true that there's going to continuously be a tug for those who even consider to hold office to be in more alignment, to be more responsible and more responsive to the corporate market structure of the world. And those who don't who are seen or perceived as going outside of those particular parameters, well, they'll be more or less ridiculed and or ignored at a certain point. But once again, I have to go back to the point that this is something that their parties have helped create. Braun's party, the Democrats. Sharpton's party, the Democrats. Kucinich's party, the Democrats, have helped create this atmosphere. And once again, during those 2000 elections, when Nader was running, it was their party that played a role in negating and ridiculing Nader from being allowed to have his voice heard. So basically, they're upset, in a sense, for how they're being neglected and considered basically a non-factor by the corporate media system and by the parties that they support, in the same way that their parties help structurally engineer Nader out of that platform in the 2000 election. Now, next up, let's hear how the other candidate. We went through Kucinich and let him, you know, speak some of his opinion. Then Braun. Let's hear Sharpton, the last of the three. Let's see what he has to say about how people deciding who should and who should not run is dangerous in the world today. Check this out.
Reverend Sharpton, you were raising your hand before. In response to which part of what happened?
Well, I think that I think all of us have an opportunity to beat Bush if we do not break and chase away from our party the people that we're going to have to mobilize to come out. What I start hearing today is dangerous. That's why I didn't raise my hand. Al Gore went to New York today. He should have noticed Tammany Hall is not there anymore. Bossism is not in this body. To talk about people ought not run and that people ought to get out of this race is bossism that belongs in the other party. We waited 4 years after some of us were disenfranchised, some of us in Duval County couldn't vote, so we can express ourselves. And we're not going to have any big name come in now and tell us the field should be limited and we can't be heard. The Republicans shut us up 4 years ago. Al Gore, no Democrat should shut us up today. Let the people decide on the nominee. Bossism shouldn't happen. I know that Governor Dean and Al Gore love the internet. WWW bossism doesn't work on my computer.
All right.
Okay, once again, we have an element of smoke and mirrors going on. And the reason why I say that is that, you know, it's not that some of the things that Sharpton was saying were, you know, bad, more or less. It's just the context of who's saying them and what he represents that shows that he's basically lurking like Krucinich and Braun and these other whiners in the shadow. When he says that bossism is not in this party, I just went over the fact of how and people should not talk about who should and should not run. When the Democrats after the 2000 election say that that's it, they've had it with Nader and they're going to ice him out, he's betrayed them and so on and so and now they're talking about how he should not run and et cetera, et cetera. And I went into the whole aspect of how they raised the 5% to 15% standard of projected votes before you'd be allowed to get into the debate. This is them using bossism along with their Republican allies. So for Sharpton to start yapping about how he's against the concept of bossism and that bossism is not in this Democratic Party when it's deeply rooted in this in the Democratic Party. I mean, it's just smoke and mirrors. He's just talking in the shadows. And then he mentions, has a nerve in many ways to mention that after all, we and many people were disenfranchised in the 2000 election. And he's talking about, of course, what happened in Florida. Now, this is really the height of hypocrisy. Because while it's true that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush were the main front runners for the Republicans in engineering 90,000 plus people under the whole voting fraud scam, which basically said that if you were a felon, that your name would be on this list and get knocked off. And they knew that the list was so broad that it was going to knock off many people who were actually not felons. If your name was this close to someone else's, and you could be in a whole nother state, if your name was Chris R. Smith, and someone named Chris Franklin Smith, who was 20 years younger or 20 years older than you, had been a felon, and you were not a felon, as Chris R. Smith, and lived in Florida, your name could easily have been, and you could easily have been knocked off the list because you would have been tagged as a felon. Now, out of this 90,000 plus people who were knocked off as felons, only 5% were actually quote unquote legitimate people, i.e., felons, who by Florida law were not allowed to vote. The rest were just victims of this process. And the majority of the people who got Jack booted off were black. Now, the reason why I mentioned this was, once again, you had a situation where the Democrats had a prime opportunity to expose what happened. This story was broken by Greg Palast before Al Gore conceded. But the Democrats decided through a form of bossism, once again, that they did not want to discredit the state because this shows how vile the system is. So they elected to have the democratic rights of the 90,000 plus people negated by a form of bossism by the Republicans, because they themselves believe in a bossism system and they were more concerned with maintaining the false integrity of the state. This shows how vile these people are. In other words, they undermined one of the cornerstones of what black people have fought for during the civil rights movement. In essence, what they did was they spit on the face of Medgar Evers and Martin King and them. All of these Negro types that fought for black people to vote in the 60s, and died for it in some cases, like Medgar Evers. They basically went to their graves, dug up their graves, opened the casket, and spit in their face. Now, this right there discredits anything that the Democrats say they stand for, and Sharpton is pretending like he and his party stand for. So it wasn't just the Republicans saying to those voters in Florida and elsewhere, actually, to shut up. It was also the Democrats who decided through their form of bossism that it was more important to maintain the false integrity of this system, which is corrupt to the core. There's no real way of getting around that. But he's just playing a tap dance minstrel game when he tries to pretend. And another thing, another form of bossism that happened was that within the Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court decided who was going to be the president, they selected him. And some of the people who played a role in selecting Boy George into presidency through a form of bossism were people like Clarence Thomas, who were allowed to gain office because of the Democrats' capitulation. They could have, at the time when he was trying to get into the position of the Supreme Court, they could have blocked him. They had the votes. They had the numbers. But the Democrats intentionally and decided consciously to allow this person to gain that position. And years later, he's saying, "How you like me now?" So once again, from every angle, the Democrats have helped facilitate what Sharpton is now complaining about and what he says that he stands against, when in reality he's standing knee deep in that manure, the manure of his own party and the manure of his appendage party, the Republicans, which are all in alignment with the corporate state and the corporate media. Hold on a sec.
Basically, when the